Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location, filming. Today, the latest on ginkgo and how it has very strong antibacterial activity on skin pathogens. New experiments showing that a lot can be done to get rid of these pathogens. This is from Emory University. That's just one of 14 original studies, all published in peer-reviewed literature, that you'll be hearing about on today's program. Then we're going to set time aside for a few calls from people in the audience. We have a call-in number, a voicemail, that you can make a statement, ask a question. That number is 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. Turns out that about 95% of the people listening to this program do not listen live. Rather, they download it in the evening. So, if you'd like to go to the archives and download the show, let me give you that number, 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Also, because a judge allowed the I consider very inappropriate going door to door and asking people, have you been vaccinated? Prove it. Have your child been vaccinated? Prove it. If not, that child cannot go into a public space. Boy, is this a dangerous precedent. And yet, the majority of people are unaware of how serious it is. They're listening to the propagandist. Now New York State is moving in the legislature to disallow all exemptions unless it's specific to a medical condition. But when was the last time any doctor did a thorough examination of your child or you and said, do you have any of these following conditions that would preclude you from getting a vaccine? Well, it's never. So we're right at the verge of having no choice whatsoever. First, it starts with the children, and I absolutely promise you it's going to go to the adults. Again, mandatory. And because it's all about profit. So we're going to hear what Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who spent at least 15,000 hours researching the safety and efficacy of vaccines, she used to be very pro-vaccine, has to say on this. Continuing with our challenge against 5G. And the President of the United States has said, we want 5G. It's the best thing that could happen. Then again, he thinks a gourmet meal is a hamburger. So, as always, he's wrong on everything. And so we're going to challenge all this propaganda about 5G being great. It's not. It's deadly. And if time permits, I'm going to have several commentaries, some I've done myself, and I'm going to also share some insights from George Mason University and information sent by Glenn Friendly and David Weinberg about what do we live in? And I think this is very germane. What is the nature of our government? You've heard my opinion. Now I'm going to put it into a more comprehensive historical perspective and then give you current examples of what's wrong with both. Also, again, time permitting, from Truth Drink, Chris Hedges, The Martyrdom of Julian Assange. I'll be filming for one morning back in New York on Monday, Chris Hedges, and then it's off to finish the filming. We filmed several people last week. I'm only about five people away from completing all principal photography for this major film, 7 years in the making. But when it comes out, it'll be the most comprehensive, in-depth explanation of what's going on with our planet and the environment, of which global warming is only one of 53 major problems in the average American, the average scientist, the average physician, the average politician, the average employee at the EPA, the average person, a member of the National Academy of Science. I would bet anything they couldn't name 10 of these 53 imminent crises. They could say global warming. Now explain it. explain exactly the different stratospheres, hemispheres, biosphere, explain what happens with the dimming, explain what happens with the current. We are just completely misinformed. This will set the record straight and be an honest look at the future. And the future is not far away. It's happening right now. So that's probably 3 months from being able to present it to the public. We began with the latest on health and healing. As I mentioned, their ginkgo, which is one of the oldest trees in the world, has a lot of good benefits to it. It also is showing that it can have very strong antibacterial activity on your skin. So the extracts from the seeds of the ginkgo biloba tree have this antibacterial activity on pathogens that can cause skin infections like acne and psoriasis and dermatitis and eczema. That's according to Emory University. It was published in Frontiers in Microbiology. And so when you take a look at Staphylococcus aureus and Streptococcus pyogenes, these are infections. We get them. We come into contact with them. So it's important that we now know that there's another natural, non-toxic way of helping ourselves. And I believe that we would even enhance that if we blended that ginkgo extract with coconut oil, the two together. Because I found coconut oil to be one of the best single things you can put on your skin if you have cuts and scrapes and burns. And also it's terrific for repelling fleas and mosquitoes. Next up, we have a new study from the Hirslanden Clinic in Switzerland about men's beards. This is really gross, but men's beards carry more germs than a dog does on its fur. Yeah, that's correct. I'm sorry for all of you guys who thought you were really hip, but you're dirty. You're real dirty. You see, here's what happens. They did the count, and they found that the beards, short beards, long beards, doesn't matter. You have a significantly higher count of germs and bacteria in the men's beards than dog's fur. And that's saying a lot. Why? Well, what happens is that when men wipe themselves, they generally don't wash thoroughly. They don't wash their bottom and they don't wash their hands. So then they stroke their beards, touch their beards, and then it spreads. So in effect, your whole beard is just one big, ugly, stupid feces mess. Just saying. So just remember, women, next time your essential other first gets permission, you have to do that in writing. You have to prove it. You have to go to the liberal Sherpa or one of these other people and say, I've gotten permission that I can actually kiss my partner, my hubby, my whoever, on the cheek. Yeah, you might as well kiss an unflushed toilet because his beard is filled with feces. And you thought it was only S in the brains. Or four brains. No, it's all over. Just saying. Again, we're a nation that is so dirty. Man, we just lack hygiene. We just stink. We lack hygiene. Woo! You put a bidet in the average person's house and they'll celebrate that they now have a new water fountain. From Medical University Taiwan, can aloe vera be used to treat sepsis? Yeah. Sepsis, and we know what sepsis is. Sepsis is a serious condition that can lead to organ failure or death if not treated immediately. But a team of researchers from China and Japan explored the natural treatments for this disease and found that the metabolites, that's the active ingredients in aloe vera from the plant, can be used to treat sepsis. Strongly anti-inflammatory. And they have rich polyphenolic, what are called anthranoids, anthranoids, and those kill sepsis, the bacteria. So, aloe vera every day can help sepsis. That's important and reduces inflammation. From Uppsala University in Sweden, as well as University of New South Wales in Australia, comes research about the omega-3 fatty acids. And there's been a fierce debate over the last decade or so about the health benefits of omega-6 fatty acids. Now, one side believes they're too ubiquitous in the diet and fuel the inflammatory underpinning many of today's chronic diseases manifest. Another side believes that the most consumed omega-6, which is linoleic, L-I-N-O-L-E-I-C, acid, or what's abbreviated as L-A, could be just as important as omega-3 in reducing disease risk. To address this, two studies using the same methodology, comparing the risk for developing a disease over time as a function of blood linoleic acid levels, look specifically at cardiovascular disease as well as diabetes. Now, this was published in the respected Circulation Journal. They looked at 30 different observational studies in 13 countries involving 69,000 people. So that meets the criteria for really being a well-done study. The data included both baseline blood linoleic acid and subsequent risk of developing or dying from cardiovascular disease. And so they found that people were actually less likely to die from, by a substantial percentage, of cardiovascular disease if they had the linoleic acid. So that means that you should be having both the omega-3 and the omega-6. The key is getting them in their unprocessed form. So if you were to get sunflower oil, soy oil, and it's pumpkin oil, it should be dark. It should have like an off flavor, like a little crude oil smell. That's how it should taste. There should be particulate matter in it. That's how it is in nature, and that's when it's best. It's when you start processing at high heat and using caustic acids and bleaching it so that we get this nice, clear, clean-looking pure, but it's just pure calories and pro-inflammatory. So the argument shouldn't be, should we have both? Yes, we should have both. We should have the omega-3 and the omega-6, but we should have both in their unprocessed, cold form. That is the best. From Mokpo National University in South Korea, seaweed can treat metabolic disorders. That's important. This was published in Nutrition Research. So there's anti-obesity agents in seaweed, and there's blood sugar stabilizing properties in seaweed. So if you have a meal, and there are at least 100 different varieties of seaweed that you can get, they have different mouthfeels and tastes, but they're easy to prepare, and they're very nutritious. I just wouldn't buy any from Japan. They're grown up around Maine. The whole north east coast of the United States has a thriving growth of seaweed. But they're very, very nutritious and have a lot of calcium in it, more calcium in dry weight than milk does. So if you're diabetic, add seaweed. And one nice way, I'll show you an easy way to use seaweed. There's two ways. One is make a nice sauce. Now, the seaweed's going to come on the bitter side of the taste spectrum, and it generally has an unusual mouthfeel, sometimes a little slimy. But you balance that, and you balance it by putting in like an orange tofu sauce. You take tofu, you blend it with some extra virgin olive oil, some cayenne pepper, and skin an orange, peel an orange completely, take out the seeds, and then blend it. And then you blend the tofu and the orange together, and you pour that over your seaweed. It's delicious. That's one way. A separate way is you take like hijiki, a little stringy and a little bitter, and you soak it and you rinse it, soak it and rinse it, soak it and rinse it 3 times. You can cook it at a low temperature for about 10 minutes. Now you run cold water, you blanch it, put it in a bowl, and then overnight you add horseradish, mustard. I would also add some pickles, and you stir that around and let it marinate. Then you put that in the center of a cold salad. It's delicious. So that way you have two different ways of trying seaweed incorporated into your diet. From the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Center, watercress detoxifies carcinogens in smokers. That's according to the latest clinical trial. Most Americans don't eat watercress, first because it's not available most of the time. Watercress extract, however, taken several times a day, inhibits the activation of a tobacco-derived carcinogen in cigarette smokers. Now we have millions, 39 million smokers? And a lot of times they want to get off, they're just addicted to the nicotine. And then a lot of the people are using the inhalers, which is bad, and they end up with a popcorn lung, which is extremely deadly, terrible. So this is one way to help them. Now, I would go a little further than this. When I'm detoxifying people, I will use watercress because I'm aware of this study. But I also use chlorella, which is very, very good, probably better than spirulina. The spirulina is good, but this is, and then pure wheatgrass juice, 2 ounces. So you take 2 ounces of chlorella. If you don't have chlorella, pure chlorophyll, and then put ginger, lemon juice, 2 ounces of each, and then you cilantro, an ounce, and you put that into a 16-ounce glass, and you drink that throughout the day. And that is grabbing a hold of toxins, heavy metals, and especially those like cadmium from cigarette smoke, and taking them out of your lungs and your body. So that's important. That'll help you. Eating chocolate improves cognitive function. University of Maine and University of South Australia. So people who ate chocolate at least once a week performed better on multiple cognitive tasks compared to those that ate less frequently. So I'm suggesting 2 ounces of chocolate a day. It's good for your heart, it's good for your arteries, and now it's shown to be good for your brains. And a lot of people take oranges for granted. Don't. Oranges are great, and they are absorbing so much of the nutrients out of the soil, assuming the soil is not in any way adulterated with pesticides. But you're getting things from the orange that you need, your body needs. So make sure that you're having oranges in there. Eating oranges are best. Taking the orange juice is next best. And if you juice the orange, make sure that you're using the seeds. Now, why? Because orange juice improves the good cholesterol. The HDL cholesterol goes up, and that protects your heart. Orange juice boosts bone health. It also, if you mix black currant juice, you can get that as a contrast with orange juice, it reduces inflammation. That means C-reactive protein, it protects your heart, fibrinogen, and it turns off inflammation throughout your muscles. Peripheral artery disease, it reduces it. Orange juice also helps you lose weight. And it can dissolve kidney stones. The calcium oxalates, and it can destroy that. Orange juice extract suppresses prostate proliferation. It's great for men to have that. So just some of the reasons that we should have it: anti-arthritic, anti-cancer properties. And guess what? The anti-cancer properties are in the flavonoids, and that's in your skin. That's why you only want to eat organic oranges and use the skin. Juice it all. And because it inhibits what is called tumorigenesis. And that is important. And orange scent reduces anxiety and boosts your mood. So, all good. I'm Gary Nall. We're 20 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment with your questions. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is for Gary. What if you have a mature cataract in the right eye and in the left eye at number 2, and in the right eye it's either 3 or 4, and you do not want to have surgery? Is there any way it can be dissolved or diminished, especially the mature one in the right eye? It's a nuclear cataract. Thank you.
Not easy to do. I wouldn't recommend that approach. If you had the beginning of cataract and you yourself were an animal, like a dog, you can slow it down and you frequently can reverse it, because what you're really doing is reversing oxidative stress. But first you have to understand that cataracts are not just looking at a cloud in the lens of the eye that can cause, you know, problems, and the thickening becomes clouded, or what we call opaque, and it doesn't emit the light, so therefore you're not going to be able to see the way you would otherwise. But why? Why do you have the cataract to begin with? Is it because you're aging? Because of diabetes? Heavy metal poisoning? Have you been exposed to radiation? Did you take some drugs, like steroids, which can cause eye damage? So first, stop whatever you're doing that's causing it to accelerate. And it's the gradual loss of vision that causes the problem for us. But it is a major cause of blindness worldwide, not just macular degeneration. But most of it comes from what we call free radicals and oxidative stress. And you have to turn off that. That's why smokers that have that smoke going right into their eyes, and then the smoke itself is vasoconstrictive. It constricts the capillary system going into the eye, which means that you're not getting nutrients to the eye, or to the brain for that matter. So if you wanted to really prevent cataracts from getting worse, then you would have to take about 2 milligrams a day of copper, about 5 milligrams a day of manganese, because they're known to retard the growth of cataracts and help healing. Then there's a nutrient called glutathione. It's the most important nutrient. It's actually an amino acid that your liver produces. It's extremely healthy, and it protects you against toxins. So it also has been shown to slow the progress of cataracts. I would use grape seed extract. That's a powerful antioxidant. L-lysine. Now, of course, people know that L-lysine is important for collagen formation, and it neutralizes a lot of viruses. But it's also good for your eyes. Pantothenic acid, which is vitamin B5, generally at 500 milligrams. Vitamin A is important. That's your vision vitamin. And you either take vitamin A as itself or a carotenoid complex, which is a precursor to vitamin A. The B complex is needed, about 50 milligrams of B1, 2, and 6. Vitamin C, starting at 5,000 milligrams, going up to about 8,000 a day. Vitamin E and zinc, and bilberries, bilberry extract. They're rich in bioflavonoids, and that can protect your retina. And ginkgo biloba, what I just mentioned a few minutes ago, improves microcapillary circulation. Your green vegetables are extremely important for cataracts. Collard greens, kale, mustard greens, spinach, turnip greens. All important. Blueberries, blackberries, cherries, pomegranates, also good. Don't have any dairy products, no animal products, no fried food, no processed sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no fluoridated water. All that is important, because it contributes. But a lot of people have heavy metals in their body and aren't even aware of it, and that contributes to cataracts. Cadmium, for example, is found at levels 2 or 3 times higher than normal in the lenses with cataracts. What is the best? Unfortunately, the best thing is the one you said you wouldn't want, and that's cataract surgery. Then you never have to have a cataract again. It's not that expensive. There's a very, very high success rate, and especially at eye clinics that specialize in it. But first go for 3 months or so trying what I just suggested and see if there's an improvement, or at least stopping its progression, because when you have a senile cataract, which is what you seem to have, you have one of the worst, and rarely, if ever, are they reversed. Okay, we'll take one more call.
Hi, Gary. My name is Frank. Yes, and I'm calling to say that I did go to the Tri-State Healing Center. My wife and I were both treated there for not life-threatening illnesses, but we both were treated there, and it was really it was so helpful. And I was part of the running and walking group at the time. And all the things that I've learned, you know, with the group and at the Tri-State Healing Center helped me tremendously. And I'm at this point, I'm in my mid-70s, and I'm still doing very well. And I attribute that to all the stuff that I've learned over the years, being part of your group and being at the Healing Center. And I probably wouldn't be around today if it wasn't for you. So I just want to thank you personally. And I wish that there was another Tri-State Healing Center that I could attend. Thank you so much, Gary. Bye-bye.
That's very nice. Thank you. I'm always interested in hearing from people who 20, 30 years ago came to health support group or to were involved in one of the clinical studies. I've done over 40 clinical studies with over 20,000 people, and see how they're doing today. If they stayed on the protocols, what's the outcome? If they didn't, what's the cause and reasons? We learn from that. That feedback is important. And I wish there was a Tri-State Healing Center today as well, but we're at a different time. And I remember how much of a commitment I had to make to keep it open. I was down there in the morning at 7 o'clock opening it up. After I came back from my workout, I went directly from Central Park there, opened the doors, and I was there at midnight, 7 days a week for nearly 15 years. So then you have to close a chapter to bring balance back into your life, and that's what was done. That does not mean there won't be another effort. It depends upon what's happening in the next year, because I visualize something different. I visualize an anti-aging environment where all diseases of aging are dealt with simultaneously. Doesn't matter what the disease is, because with all the new research we have now on stem cells and therapy, and I believe that we can make an enormous difference. But that's only in the thought stage at this time. I'll take more calls on an upcoming program. I'm concerned about what's happening to us in the larger context of being aware or lacking that awareness of what kind of society we have morphed into, and why, on the one hand, we will say, or women, the majority of women will say, it's my body, I want my choice. All right? But when a woman says, it's my body, and I want to decide whether I want to put a vaccine in it or not, then suddenly we say, it's not your choice. But I want my child to be homeschooled. Then you're an unfit parent, and your child will become illiterate. How do you know? Why would you say that? You're for a person's rights until it's something that you have accepted the state is better mandated to fulfill as an obligation. How did we get here? How did we get to where innocent people who've committed no crime are pulled over on the side of the road by the thousands and told, do you have any cash? I've got about $800. Well, give it to me. Why? That's my money to travel across the United States. I'm going to visit my sister. Nope. We suspect you have drugs. In Oklahoma, true story, give us all your credit cards and debit cards. Why? I believe that this car may have been traveling along a highway where drugs have been transported. Therefore, you're a suspect. I don't do drugs. Doesn't matter. Then you see the officer take this little machine, about 9 inches long and about 6 inches across, about 4 inches deep, and put each one of your credit cards in it, and it maximally takes everything out. If you have a $20,000 credit line with American Express, they suddenly have $20,000 of your money, and you have a bill. You're owing American Express $20,000. Credit debit card, they take the same, they do the same thing. Suddenly you're handed back your wallet, and you're now $50,000 or $75,000 or $100,000 in debt, and they don't give you a ticket, they don't arrest you, they don't warn you, they simply say go on your way. $4.5 billion with a B, billion dollars in debt. How did we get to where the state can steal? How did we get to where 80,000 SWAT teams break into people's homes, hold guns to people's heads, shoot their dogs, take whatever they want because they're allowed to keep it? And you haven't committed a crime. Maybe you owe a bill and they're going to serve you. Instead of simply sending a person a service notice that they're late on a bill, now you get arrested. How did this happen? And why is there not a word about it, even though former Vice President Joe Biden was one of the authors of that? How do we get to where we can charge 1,000% interest on a payday loan that is kept rolling over because a person is too poor to pay it off? And it was originally a $200 loan, and now it's $2,000 in interest. And that doesn't change. How is it Samuel Jackson can go on television and say in his own, you know, kind of Pulp Fiction, tough-ass guy, what's in your wallet with an attitude from hell? You're going to get 2% back, and are you not smart enough to realize that? Without the irony, but I'm giving 18% to Capital One, so they're giving back 1% to 2%. I'm still out 16%. That makes no economic sense at all. And we adapt to this. We maladapt to everything without any irony. And then the politicians have weaponized the entire political arena so that there's two combatants, neither ever able to inflict more than a superficial wound because all of it is a game. One calls themselves in America the democracy. The other says we're a republic, which is right. What are we? Do we have any idea what we are? We say we're a nation of religions. Well, what kind of religions? What influence do those religious leaders play in the society? What do they do in the body politic? How do they control the laws that are on the books? Will we have a war on drugs if they hadn't meddled and put their own moralistic values upon that law? So this concerns me. And I want to thank the good people at George Mason University for better understanding it. Why? Because we need to go back, as we do frequently on this program, and take a more honest historical look. Because how often do we hear the claim that our nation is a democracy? Every second of every day. Was a democratic form of government the vision of the founding fathers? No. No. As it turns out, the word democracy appears absolutely positively nowhere in the two most fundamental founding documents of our nation, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Instead of a democracy, the Constitution's Article 4, Section 4 declares the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Our Pledge of Allegiance to the flag says not to the democracy for which it stands, but for the republic for which it stands. So what is the difference between republican and democratic forms of government? That's going to take two answers. One is historical, the other is pragmatic and current. Let's take a look at John Adams. By the way, one of the smartest presidents in the United States, one of the oldest lived presidents. He was a constant communicator with Thomas Jefferson right up until the time both of them died. They were communicating with very profoundly deep and meaningful letters to each other. They both seem to have morphed into wiser people than they were earlier in their life. Still flawed, but we are all flawed. It's just to the degree of on a spectrum. John Adams captured the essence of the difference when he said, You have rights antecedent to all earthly governments, rights that cannot be repealed or constrained or restrained by human laws, rights derived from the greater legislator of the universe. Now, poetic as that is, it is still germane. Nothing in our Constitution suggests that government is a grantor of rights. Nothing. Today, virtually everything that you believe that you are owed is supposed to come from the government. In effect, we become wards of the state. Can we have another bowl of porridge, sir? And we wait for a technocrat, controlling bureaucrats, mindless automatons, with no empathetic connection to the citizen. And the technocrat looks over their shoulder and says, how is this request for something going to impact us? Should we go into Iran? Should we go into Iraq? Should we give Israel $28 million a day or not? Should we support giving Saudi Arabia nuclear weapons or not? Should we give them nuclear technology or not? Should we support the war in one part of the world, in the poorest country in the Middle East, Yemen, where 29 million people are suffering, 21 million starving to death, or not? How do we benefit? How do we, institutions, think tanks, how do we, intellectual roundtables, like the business roundtables and the Council on Foreign Relations, how do we gain? How do we game the system to gain? And there are titular figureheads called the President of the United States, for all intents and purposes, just regular people, some a little more refined, and others totally crude, rude, vulgar, stupid, imbecilic, morons, idiots, and others more refined, more intellectual, but less humane. Sociopaths. You see, all of them are sociopaths to different degrees on a spectrum. And we like them. We overlook the fact they are lying to us all the time. And the orders they give to the people they surround themselves with, the technocrats. So when it finally bubbles down to what we, the citizen, gets, we are actually either outraged at what we didn't get, or very snug in what we did get. But it still comes back to the idea that, as John Adams said, that nothing in our Constitution suggests the government is a grantor of rights. Instead, the government is envisioned as the protector of rights. Well, when was the last time the protector of rights, the government and the FDA and the FTC and the CDC and the Energy Department, protected us from the exploitation and expropriation and pollution of our environment, our rivers, our streams, our ocean, the Gulf of Mexico, the air, chemtrails? When was the last time we were protected against the folly of the stupidity, the insanity, the inert brain chemistry of someone saying that vaccines are safe and effective when they've already been declared by the Supreme Court in a unanimous decision to be inherently unsafe? And every toxicological journal in the world shows there's not a single ingredient in a single vaccine determined safe for everyone. So we play this game, a game that is not virtual reality. It is going to have an immediate impact, and does. So we honor those who are willing to go with the mob, with the consensus, and roll up their arms and take a dangerous chemical into their body. And then when you have 7 million parents of children who have been damaged or they themselves damaged, we have to deny that it was the vaccine. And we can control the media to make sure that that message is carried forward. So in recognition that it is a government that poses the greatest threat of our liberties, it is the government that is able to kill you, to arrest you. It was Barack Obama, smiling man, hand in the air, waving, shooting basketball. Yeah, won the Nobel Prize for Peace, and yet has caused more wars than any president in American history. But that's just insignificant, isn't it? All the dead people in Libya, the regime changes in Syria and Honduras. As long as we like his tie, it is irrelevant what he does. And so what we have is we have our government, the state government, the local government, the federal government, the police, the militarization of the police, the unthinking masses of the police, the unthinking masses of the soldiers, our real heroes. Well, how heroic is it when they bomb people? How heroic was it when the Clintons caused 500,000 children to die? Not very heroic. But who's counting mistakes when you're a Democrat or Republican? So the reality is the greatest threat the world faces today is the faultiness of our belief systems and our belief that a government is actually capable of resolving any of our conflicts when it is at the same time commensurate in creating every conflict. The largest polluter in the world, the United States military. Would you know that by any of the environmental groups? Most of the environmental groups are so self-serving, mind-numbingly stupid. They get hundreds of millions of dollars, some of them, from the very polluters that they should be challenging. A wink and a nod. No, look at the first 10 amendments of the Constitution. Thou shalt not abridge, infringe, deny, disparage, and shall not be violated nor denied. The government has done all the above. In a Republican form of government, there is rule of law. All citizens, including government officials, are accounted to the same laws. Government power is limited and decentralized through a system of checks and balances. Government intervenes in civil society to protect its citizens against force and fraud, but does not intervene in the cases of peaceful voluntary exchange. And yet today, tell me the last time that a member of the CIA, the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, ICE, the Justice Department, the FBI, in the Justice Department, when a single person was held accountable for the crimes that they have committed, from murder and genocide, regime change, and violating people's rights, search and seizure, shooting innocent people, when was the last time they were held accountable? When was the agencies held accountable? When were the people heading the agencies held accountable? They weren't. Contrast the framers' vision of a republic with that of a democracy. According to the Webster's Dictionary, democracy is defined as government by the people, especially the rule of the majority. In a democracy, the majority rule either directly or through its elected representatives. As in a monarchy, the law is whatever the government determines it to be. Laws do not represent reason. They represent power. The constraint is upon the individual instead of the government. Unlike that envisioned under the republican form of government, rights are seen as privileges and permissions that are granted by government and can be rescinded by government. So right now they're wanting to bring Julian Assange here. Is it based upon actual justice? No, there is no justice. It's an arcane law that was written back in 1917, I believe, the Espionage Act, that the President of the United States, Obama, caused 10 people to be arrested. These were brave and courageous people. They worked within governmental agencies, and they saw corruption. They saw the breaking of laws. They brought this to our attention, and for exposing crimes against the American citizens and the world community, they were punished. And yet the media supported that. Right now, where's the media supporting Julian Assange? They're criticizing him. Where are the liberals in our community? Yeah, you have Glenn Ford, Nellie Bailey, Black Gender Report. You have Chris Hedges, Cornell West. You have Professor Henry Giroux and others. But they're not a part of the corporatocracy. They're not a part of duopoly. They're not a part of the Republican or Democratic parties or machines. They're not a part of the system. By their very truths, they have been excluded from participating in any form of government because they see how rampantly corrupt all of government is. And yet, these arcane and violent laws like the National Defense Authorization Act and the Patriot Act, are not meant to free us, to protect us, to liberate us, to allow us to have a greater quality of life. They're meant to control us. There is considerable evidence that demonstrates the disdain held by our founders for democracy. James Madison, in the Federalist Paper number 10, said that a pure democracy, there is nothing to check the inducement to sacrifice the weaker party or the obnoxious individual. At the 1787 Constitutional Convention, Edwin Randolph said, that is, in tracing these evils to their origin, every man had found it in the turbulence and follies of democracy. And John Adams said, remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There was never a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. Later on, Chief Justice John Marshall observed, between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos. In a word or two, the founders knew that a democracy would lead to the same kind of tyranny the colony suffered under King George III. So the framers gave us a constitution that is replete with anti-majority rule, undemocratic mechanisms. Now, there's a difference between a group of people deciding for themselves what is in their best interest, what they could choose, and allowing for challenge. There's something else when the mob, the majority, become ruled by and influenced directly and propagandized and conditioned to believe what is not in the best interest of that very same majority. I'll give you an example. 900,000 more or less physicians in the United States. They are given 100% of the authority and privilege to treat us. Diagnosis, supposedly to help us, yet they're also the number one cause of our death, more than cancer or heart disease. They're the number one cause of our injury, more than auto accidents or accidental poisonings. They have absolute control. Now imagine if you are a person who believes that the individual also should have control over their life, and that person becomes a holistic physician in the process, sees the limitations of what they've been taught, and chooses a more, let's say, naturalistic approach. And it works, and the patients begin to thrive and grow and are healthier. And then the doctor is arrested for fraud. Did the doctor hurt a patient? No. Did the pediatrician up in Oregon, who was one time president of the Pediatrician Society of Oregon, Janice Keller Phelps, who I interviewed, she came to New York to see if I could help her. No, when she stopped recommending formula and started recommending breastfeeding, they went after her. How dare you recommend something as unscientifically valid as breastfeeding when you have all the science you need supporting formula? Almost every single holistic doctor at some point has knocked on my door because they were being attacked. Robert Atkins, yeah, Robert Geller, Stuart Berger, Harold Rosenberg, all of them. These were doctors. They were not accused by their patients of harm. The state accused them of not complying with the rules that they had established for the majority. So what happens when we can't challenge the majority? What happens when our truth is censored? What happens when free speech radio won't allow our free speech because it is not ideologically pure enough or in alignment enough with them? They want to see the Electoral College eliminated. Fine, you know what would happen? New York, California, and Illinois would dominate because they have the most of the votes there, but now we have two votes from each state. So the smallest state and the largest state still have two senators. Everybody tries to play the system. In their wisdom, the framers gave us the Electoral College so that in presidential elections, large, heavily populated states could not use their majority to run roughshod over small, sparsely populated states In order to amend the Constitution, it requires a two-thirds vote of both houses or two-thirds of state legislatures to propose an amendment and requires three-fourths of state legislatures for ratification. And part of the reason for having a bicameral Congress is that it places another obstacle to majority rule. 51 senators can block the wishes of 435 representatives and 49 senators. The Constitution gives the president a veto to thwart the power of all 535 members of Congress. It takes two-thirds of both houses of Congress to override the president's veto. There's even a simpler way to expose the tyranny of majority rule. Ask yourself how many of your day-to-day choices would you like to have settled through a democratic process where only the majority rule would be held. Right now, every human being would have to be vaccinated. We would all have to eat meat 3 times a day. We would all have to drink beer or other alcoholic beverages. We would all have to be obese. You would have to eat yourself till you meet an obesity level that does not embarrass or body shame those who are obese. We would all have to watch the Kardashians in that mindless orgy of egotistical and egomaniacal pandering. Nothing of value, but we would all have to watch it. We would all have to vote either Democrat or Republican. There'd be no room for independent thinking, independent choices. We'd have to buy the same car. We'd have to live in the same neighborhoods, buy the same house, have the same clothes. They would tell us which foods we could eat. Sounds exaggerated? Unfortunately, most Americans see our liberties as protected by the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but that vision was not fully shared by its framers. In the Federalist Papers, number 84, Alexander Hamilton argued bills of rights are not only unnecessary in the proposed Constitution, but would even be dangerous. For why declare that things shall not be done by Congress which there is no power to do? Why, for instance, should it be said that the liberty of the press shall not be restrained when no power is given to Congress by which restrictions can be imposed? And so it goes. But there's another side to this issue. I believe both are wrong. Democracy versus republic, they both are inept for different reasons and similar reasons. Democracy, power is held by the population as a whole, majority rules. Republic, power held by individual citizens, individual rights. Democracy, citizens as a whole have the power to make all laws directly at the ballot box, but then the ballot box is stuffed and people are bought, and then you have money into elections, so it's a foolish errand. In the republic, people elect representatives who are also completely captured by special interest groups to make the laws according to the constraints of the Constitution. In a democracy, protection of our rights can be overridden by the will of the majority. In a republic, the Constitution protects the rights of all people from the will of the majority. In a democracy, there tends to be favored market economics, in which case that's what we've had. How does that work for all of us? It doesn't. In a republic, almost always free market economics work. Keynesian, capitalistic, and how's that work? It works very well for those in power. It doesn't work well at all for those without power. In a democracy, the less constraints of government imposed by the majority on the minority. In a republic, the majority cannot take away certain inalienable rights. Both, in theory, all citizens have equal say, except the rich have greater say, the powerful had greater say, and the celebrities have greater say, and everybody else has no say. You see, both systems espouse the same social structure, resist separation of class politically or economically, and yet all we are is a nation separated by class, politics, race, education. So, properly speaking, the U.S. is an oligarchy within a representational democracy. The U.S. is not a direct democracy at federal level, more direct at the state, administrative, local levels. Switzerland is a direct democracy, voting in 4 times a year and populist votes on all laws. All we have today is an oligarchy, small groups leading the U.S. to wars, Vietnam, Iraq, Libya, and the regime changes. Americans have no say over federal budget at all. We have no say when $21 trillion goes missing and there's no consequence. The banking reform doesn't exist. The pharmaceutical industry, the EPA, are all captured and hence represent only that which makes money, big oil, the FCC by the telecom industry, the Defense Department by the private military complex and cabals of the neocons, the federal government national policies to rule over direct democratically elected policies at the state levels like labeling of GMOs and hydrofracking and eminent domain laws, all favor corporations, never the people. And Big Pharma fast-tracking drugs through the FDA that are dangerous. Every drug that's been withdrawn because they're toxic or kill people has been first approved by the FDA. Who's held accountable? No one. Who loses their job? No one. Private interests run the Department of the Interior and give it access to exploit public lands for personal profit that are designated for citizens. The State Department, there is no democracy, no reason, no rationale. There is no morality in our Department of State. We have these clowns, these buffoons, these morons, these functional idiots who give money to a president and become an ambassador. What an embarrassment. Our Department of Homeland Security is manned through private contracts with private intelligence corporations like Google and Twitter and Facebook and hidden government of the Internet. So how does that benefit or protect you? It doesn't. It controls us all. So to the fool who thinks that we are a republic and the fool who thinks we're a democracy, we are neither. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening.